On December 4th, 1984, David Brocart reported a robbery at the convenience store he owned. The store was located on Highway 16 in Lansing, North Carolina. Mr. Brocart reported the safe was missing. Investigators quickly rounded up two 20-somethings and charged them with the crime. The pair stated the safe could be found at the bottom of a cliff near where the Ashe County and Wilkes County lines met. They had thrown it over at an area called the Jumping Off Place. On December 10th, officers rappelled down, and at the bottom of the 1,200-foot drop, they found the safe just as expected. But they also made a very unexpected find. What they saw was so much more than evidence from a robbery. There, at the bottom of the cliff, sticking up from the mud, was a pair of skeletal hands.
Hello, fellow sleuths. I am Kathy.
And I'm Michael.
You are listening to A Southern Sleuth. Our story today is a little different than our previous ones. It's really two stories. We have a victim and we have a person charged with a crime. So while it isn't the mysterious whodunit that we usually cover, it is still a mystery. It's a mystery because no one was convicted of the crime. It starts with a missing person and ends with a different missing person. This story takes us to the beautiful mountains of North Carolina. I have loved visiting our mountains ever since I was a little girl. As a matter of fact, Michael, you and I honeymooned in the North Carolina mountains.
Yes, it was a great week. We actually had a whole week.
Yeah, very unusual for us. And dense forests cover the beautiful peaks and valleys, and it's particularly breathtaking in the fall. But those same trees and steep terrain provide cover for people that might not want to be found. Remember Eric Rudolph, the Olympic bomber?
I do.
He was hiding in those mountains for 5 years with a $1 million reward posted for his capture. That was before you and I met, but I can remember being with my family in the mountains near where he was thought to be while he was still on the run, and I really wanted to spot him.
So they had actually tracked him to that area and were looking. I didn't know that. For some reason, I always thought it was a chance find.
I can't remember why they thought he was there, led them to that, but they were pretty sure that that was where he was at, and that's where he was, because he was eventually apprehended in Murphy, North Carolina, and was tried.
But Mountain Man.
That's not the case for this fugitive that we're talking about today. This story starts on January 15th, 1984, when 24-year-old Sherry Hart had plans to go out. Her mother was babysitting Sherry's 6-year-old daughter, April, for the evening. At 2 p.m., Sherry headed out in her Ford Granada. She was originally supposed to be going on a date with her boyfriend, but he ended up not even being in town. So she decided to go out on her own. The next morning came for Sherry's parents and daughter, but they had no idea where Sherry was and why she hadn't returned home. Her father drove around looking for her, and a few days after her disappearance, he found the Ford in the parking lot of the Sky City discount store. I don't remember Sky City's. They must have been, there's something like Roses. Right. They must have been only in that part of the state, because I don't remember even ever hearing about them.
Yeah, I don't either. Doesn't sound familiar.
Her dad said that he watched the car for a few days, but he didn't see anyone coming or going anywhere around it. And after 2 weeks went by, her parents reported her missing, but police didn't seem too concerned. She was a grown woman, and many people around just thought she left town with a man. Her parents had no answers and were hoping Sherry would come back home. So they waited, and they waited. Mm-hmm. But after nearly a year, they had begun to lose hope.
Yeah, I think after a day, I would be putting together a search team and calling out the dogs, doing whatever I could.
I really didn't find a lot of information about what they did as far as trying to find her. But they didn't really get any big breaks until that December robbery of that convenience store. And then that robbery led to the discovery of her body, which was mainly bones by that time. The investigators have stated many times what an amazing stroke of luck it was to find the body. It could have easily been missed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's almost like divine intervention to help lead to the suspect, you know, because they never would have found it.
And they said if they had gone down the mountain just a little bit over this way or a little bit over that way, they wouldn't have ever seen her body.
Wow.
They took the clothes that were found with the body, and her mother was able to identify the clothes as being the ones that Sherry had on when she left home. Because just finding the body, I mean, they didn't know who it was, but there was a couple of girls missing in the area, and Sherry was one of them. And then they had to go back and locate the rest of the bones. It took them a bit to find the jawbone, but when they did, they were able to use dental records to make a positive identification of Sherry Hart.
And that's got to be some of the most gruesome work. I mean, imagine that's your job. That you're analyzing teeth records to match a deceased person.
I would love it.
I mean, it's important work. Don't get me wrong, but just seems so sad that that's where we're at is
identifying people by dental records.
I'm just saying, that even has to happen.
Well, at that point, the investigators had the body, but they still had no leads. And they didn't until March when a $10,000 reward was posted, and that brought in the tips. Several witnesses reported seeing Sherry with two men on that night that she went missing. Those men were Jeffrey Scott Burgess and Richard Lynn Bear. He goes by Lynn. Burgess was picked up, and he was ready to talk.
So the money, once nobody was talking until they offered a reward, and then...
It didn't seem that way. It seemed like once they put up that reward, people wanted to come forward and say, hey, yeah, I saw her.
Well, it could be a safety thing, you know, because it's like, what's my motivation other than doing the right thing? They might be scared of the person, you know.
Who knows? But Burgess did tell his version of the events that night, and he told police where to find some of Sherry's personal items, so they knew he was telling the truth. Investigators had already pieced together some of what Sherry had done on her last night after she left home. They knew she stopped at a couple of places, one of them being a gas station. She had had dinner with a friend, and she ended up parking near the Sky City store in West Jefferson.
And why did she get in the car with those guys?
I don't know. According to Burgess, it was there at that Sky City store in that parking lot around 9 p.m., when Sherry was spotted by himself and Bear. And these two 19-year-old men are cousins, and they grew up together. And they were just out cruising around in Bear's brother's white Mustang. And Burgess said they just pulled up and asked her if she wanted to cruise around with them. And she had some alcohol, and she wanted to ride around and drink, so I guess she got in the car with them. It's not really clear how well she knew them. But Burgess did say that when Bear spotted Sherry, he said that he was going to get some of that.
Yeah, I may have said the same thing at some point. But why did she have alcohol with her? That's a little wild riding around. I mean, I don't know. Anyway.
Well, it was the 80s.
I know that doesn't matter. I'm just, Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, and I think that it was like.
She could have got it right there at the store.
Right, and she didn't have. Her plans had kind of fallen through, so maybe right. she was just looking for something to do.
You said she had a boyfriend or she was married?
She had a boyfriend, but he wasn't even in the state.
Was that the baby's?
No, no. Okay. Her and the father, April's father, had been divorced for a while. I think she had been living with her parents for about 2 years when this happened. They had, April had been born, I believe, when she was about 17.
Gotcha.
So she was a very young mother.
Like my mother.
Right. Well, Burgess said that the three of them were just riding around at first. Bear was driving. Everything was going well. Everything was normal. He said Sherry was pretty intoxicated and Bear was drinking also. And at some point, Sherry asked them to stop so she could relieve herself. Bear pulled over, Sherry got out, and according to Burgess, Bear tried to make advances towards Sherry then, and they wrestled a little, and she kind of fought him off. But it isn't clear whether Sherry realized she was in danger at that time. But Burgess did say she asked to go home for the first time that night. She asked to go home to her little girl. He said she asked that a few more times throughout the night.
Oh, that's so sad. Hearing that little detail for some reason really bothered me when you were talking about the case. Just, it's like she knew she was in trouble, you know, because why else, you know.
Yeah, I think she was almost drunk, you know, a bit, but and she maybe it didn't really sink in, maybe a little bit.
Yeah, I think asking for her daughter might have been her way of sympathizing with somebody she knew that
right,
was
trying to get them to have
right
empathy for her. Yeah. So they drove around some more, and then Sherry asked to stop once again for a bathroom break. This time she walked off into the woods and Bear followed her. Burgess said he got out of the car and was standing there smoking when Sherry came hurriedly out of the woods. He didn't say she was running, but he said she was walking fast enough that he could hear her feet hitting the ground.
Yeah.
And Bear was behind her. He said she came right up to him, grabbed him in a hug, and said, "You won't hurt me, will you?" He said he answered no, and at right about that time, Bear hit Sherry in the head with his pistol.
What the hell?
He said it made a very loud popping sound, and he would have thought she would have been out cold, but she was still alert. He said she put her hand up to her head and then saw the blood, and she said, "What hit me?" Bear told her something must have come from the woods and hit her.
Man.
Burgess said he told Bear we need to take her to the hospital, but Bear said it had gone too far.
And see, that's right then, that's where I don't know if the cousin was scared of Bear, but to me, that's like the point where you're a part of this crime too.
Yeah, that's where he could have made a decision that would have changed this whole thing.
Yep.
And I think that Sherry probably realized then that she was in serious trouble. They all got back in the car.
Once you're assaulted.
With Burgess driving, and Bear pulled Sherry into the car. She was barely coherent, but Burgess said at some point she said, "Let's go to JD's to get beer." And JD's was a nearby bar. And they did start driving in that direction because they were pretty close to it anyway. But I don't know. Maybe she was just trying to play it cool and hoping they could get somewhere.
Trying to get where a crowd was or people, you know. Some kind of safety net.
They did head that way, but Bear told Burgess to pull over at a nearby spot. And he pulled Sherry from the car. The area they pulled over at was called Jumping Off Rock, and Bear told Burgess to keep driving, to go up to the bar, and to turn around and come back and pick him up. Burgess did as he was asked, and when he returned, Bear was all alone.
See, I mean, I don't know all the details, but right there, he's almost as guilty as Bear. When you know the girl's been hit with a gun, gone off in the woods, you know, you're not going to hurt me, are you? And then you're going to drop him off. I mean, drop her off with him. I mean, that's just...
Burgess said he pretty much knew what had happened, but he asked Bear anyway, and Bear told him that he had shoved her off the mountain. And then he threatened Burgess's wife and child with harm if Burgess said anything.
Yeah, that's what I was figuring. There's some kind of... He must have been a pretty a fearful guy, and he was obviously scared of him. So.
Right, and they had a lifelong bond.
But he had a whole year to say something. You know, it's not like, you know what I mean?
I guess they had a deadly secret to keep between them. Right. And I don't know who else they told, but no one said anything. But Bear was arrested after Burgess's statement, and he was charged with first-degree murder, and he pled not guilty. Now, I'm not sure what Burgess was charged with, but I know he was named as the co-defendant. And they set the trial for July 29th, 1985. And while awaiting trial, Bear and Burgess were being held in the Wilkes County Jail. On the morning of July 17th, jailers realized that Bear was missing. It's never been proven, but it is said that Bear's sister Linda was romantically involved with Jailer, and that particular jailer was the only one on duty July 16th. It's believed that Bear simply was allowed to walk out of the jail and into a waiting car.
That's unbelievable. I mean, that's... Did he have to account for that, or is it just like, oops?
Yes, two jailers lost their job. I believe one was fired and one quit. But there were no charges brought because they couldn't really prove. I assume they had no cameras. You know, now there's cameras everywhere. But there was no way to prove who did what or who had gotten lax or if anybody was really involved.
Wow, lost his job. Yeah.
So that was the beginning of Bear's life on the run. Although some people say he never really ran too far. Most people that live in that area have stated they've seen him or that they know he's been around that area in the Ashe and Wilkes County area over the years. His sister states that she did not help him escape, but she also says she doesn't believe he killed Sherry Hart. All members of the Bear family state they have no idea where Lynn Bear is and that they have not provided him with any assistance in staying hidden.
Well, that could be true, but it's highly unlikely, especially if he's been seen in the area. The fact that all that evidence there and sisters... It's not unusual for family to stick up for each other, but in a case like that, you know, if they're willing to turn that kind of eye, I'm sure that some assistance was provided, because I'm sure it's not like they can just go out and get a job, you know.
Right, and there's been reports that sometimes he dresses as a woman, he's disguised as a woman, so how would they even know that if somebody hadn't seen him or talked about it?
Right, like I saw Richard, I mean, that's a woman, you know. That's weird in and of itself. Maybe he was just trying to hide.
I think it was like a disguise. Like, I don't think that was a thing before, but that has been mentioned that he may be disguised as a woman.
It's getting weirder and weirder.
He had a baby daughter at the time he was arrested. Now, her name is Brandy, and she has no memory of her father.
Thank God.
She does believe he is a criminal, but she still wishes that she could know him. And I guess it's just an awful position to be in. She just wants to physically see this person that has basically been a ghost story her whole life.
Yeah, that is an awful position to be in, because you just want some kind of validation or something just to understand where you came from or something, you know?
Yeah, and she believes that the Bear family knows where he is and that they have helped him over the years. She doesn't have a relationship with that side of the family, but she doesn't really wish them any ill will. She just wishes that she could have some kind of communication with her father before he's no longer alive.
Right. Well,
and she does believe that he's alive.
Well, it's highly unlikely at this point that that'll happen. But maybe if it does, it'll at least lead to his arrest.
In 1993, there was a tip, apparently a tip they took very seriously, that led investigators to a relative's home. But upon their arrival, Bear was not there, and they say they probably missed him by minutes.
Wow. Right there. I wonder what the tip was.
Wouldn't we all like to know?
Yeah.
In 2002, law enforcement burst into a man's home with a warrant to fingerprint him. He was handcuffed and given no explanation as to why he was being taken in for fingerprinting. He never really got a straight answer from police as to why they targeted him, but documents say that they thought he was Richard Lynn Bear. When he turned out not to be Bear, but to truly be who he said he was, investigators stated that Bear may have stolen his identity. Nothing more was ever said about it, and the man could not get any further information. Now, I'm not going to say his name up here because he's had plenty of trouble related to this, but his name is not that hard to find.
Well, see, that I'd have to get an answer. I mean, you come in my house, arrest me like that, and accuse me of being some suspected killer.
They acted like it never happened.
Afterwards?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like it never happened.
Yeah, well, why would they want to acknowledge it? Then they got to try to...
But it is in the case file. But they acted to him like it never happened.
See, that, I guess legally, if they admit to something like that, then they're setting themselves up for future lawsuits and things. But I'm like, you know, a simple apology can go miles to making somebody feel respected again. You know, when you're falsely accused, I can't even imagine people that have been in jail for, you hear these cases where they've been in jail for 20, 30 years and getting out. And I just can't even imagine how you know, no amount of money could make that right, you know.
Well, remember Jeff Burgess. After Bear escaped, they released Jeff Burgess from jail on the condition that he would return to testify against Bear if he were captured. Burgess had a rough go of it from then on, as you can imagine. He and his wife divorced. He spent some time in prison for other things. He drifted around and was often homeless. At some point, he did get remarried and fathered his third child. And I'm not real sure, the details are kind of hazy. But in 2012, he was living in Texas and reportedly trying to get his life back on track. But he ended up dying one night in his sleep.
So, that's the last witness. Damn.
That's the main witness. And as of now, Richard Lynn Bear only has one active charge, which is his unlawful flight to avoid prosecution. His murder charge was dismissed with the option to reinstate if he is found. I'm just not sure a conviction could be gotten with the main witness now deceased.
Yeah, and prosecutors are going to be very hesitant to pick up something that old if they don't think they can win. Right, that's usually
how it goes. I
don't
know how much physical evidence there was, so it pretty much... looks to, like if I were his defense attorney, I would put it all on Burgess and say I wasn't even there.
Right. And then they can't prove otherwise because there's no DNA and no...
I hope there's some other proof. And it would be nice for Sherry's family if they could at least find him.
Sure.
Her parents are dead now, but her daughter April is a mom herself. And I'm sure it isn't easy knowing that he's out there and has never answered for her mother's death. So maybe this is the year that Sherry Hart will have some justice.
I sure hope so.
I obtained a lot of my information about this case through a Facebook site. A reporter named Larry Griffin has done a very in-depth series on this case. The Facebook is called Sherry Lyle Hart, 1959-1984. And if you want information on Sherry and on Lynn Bear, I highly recommend visiting this page. He says he will continue to have updates until Lynn Bear is captured. And if you have any information about Richard Lynn Bear, you can contact Mr. Griffin at The Record, which is the name of the paper that he reports for, at 336-667-0134. Thank y'all for listening. Please visit our website, asouthernsleuthpodcast.com, for pictures and links regarding this case. And join us on our Facebook group to talk to other sleuths and discover other cases.
Yes, please help us get this guy. It would be great closure, for sure.
A Southern Sleuth is a production of Cream Dream Studios. All episodes researched and written by me. All music written and performed by Michael.
That's me.